The message from these women was very clear. Essentially, after the jihadist group took control of northern Mali, life took on a new, terrifying reality in general, but it became dangerous and humiliating for women specifically. And that's the message that these women were getting across to me. The ones I spoke with had fled to safer areas, including Bamako, where I was speaking with them, out of fear for their lives and the lives of their daughters and nieces, who they often brought along with them on the journey.
Can you give us just some of the examples that they shared with you when you were there visiting them of what they've been going through?
So when I say that life is dangerous and humiliating, it's precisely that. For one, in terms of the danger, there are countless reports of sexual violence in the North. The women I spoke to had all witnessed or heard of rape or gang rape and forced marriages, and sometimes those forced marriages were with very young girls. So life was very dangerous, but also in terms of just the sheer humiliation, the armed groups who were operating in the North, their imposition of their own twisted version, if we could, of Sharia law, which this version is indeed removed from most interpretations of that law, is completely new to these groups. And suddenly these women can't leave their homes. They can't have contact with men. They can't sell goods to men, and that's often their livelihood. And they have to cover themselves with heavy scarves, even though it's 100 degrees Fahrenheit outdoors. So the women I spoke with did indeed feel humiliated. One in particular I remember described to me how in her town of Gao in the north, women who had big behinds were being forced to buy small stools to carry with them to sit on while they were shopping in the marketplace. And this was so that they wouldn't, quote, quote-unquote, offend people who were passing by in the market, how they had to bend over. Another woman told me that there's simply no joy allowed in their lives anymore. They weren't able to celebrate their weddings with their daughters in a traditional way and with music and dance. And so it was really the whole gamut of threats, from threats to their physical safety down to their dignity.
With this total lifestyle change, it sounds like for the worse, what kind of hope do they have?
The hope is still shining through. These women, like the rest of the 270,000 internally displaced people in Mali, they're in mourning for their old lives. All they want to do is go home, rebuild the small businesses they had before the conflict, and return to living in peace and dignity. Right now, however, they're just too afraid to do so, and with good reason. There's still armed operations going on in the north to wrest back control from these armed groups. And they are also waiting for the government and the police and public infrastructure. They're waiting for social services to be reinstalled in the north. And this could take months, if not years.
What kind of assistance are they receiving?
The assistance that they've been receiving thus far, I have to say, has been quite minimal. The women I spoke with had been receiving a bag of rice per month and a bit of oil. But I can't stress enough how critical the next few months are for Mali. The international community cannot drop the ball. The humanitarian access in the country is slowly but steadily improving. Many organizations are getting ready to roll out bigger and more vital protection and assistance activities, one of these being vital psychological support that many of these women and girls who have been through so much could greatly benefit from. So now the international community needs to nurture these developments. However, the aid agencies at the moment have received only 15% of the more than $386 million they've requested to help stabilize and rebuild the country. We've really got to do better.